Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm just going to go ahead and skip an intro today. So, how's everybody doing? Sherry, welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. Sherry, how's it going?
Pretty good. How's it going with you, Jason? I heard that you've got a new job, huh?
Working is not my thing. I've worked ever since I was 17, almost 50, and yes, I did get a new job in the medical field and actually in the medical laboratory field. So what I was doing before is more of like a generalist in hospital laboratory. You know, you kind of deal with a little of everything, but now I've gone into a pathology department, which is interesting because you get to see all the sort of tumors and limbs and stuff like that, and I have expressed an interest to be trained on autopsies, which, you know, I don't know how I'm going to react to that. I think I'll be okay. I kind of have a morbid personality, so I don't think I'll have a problem cutting people's ribs and assisting in the autopsy, but you never know. So I mean, like we were talking before the show, I just don't want to work. I want to retire. I'm so burned out. But I got to do what I got to do. My only complaint is the parking situation. I work pretty close to downtown Portland, and there's inadequate parking for, well, staff. I mean, it's the worst I've ever seen. So basically, it's like a fight for the staff spots. And unfortunately, at the time that I work during the day, everything's already full because I don't start till the afternoon, which means I have to park on the street. Well, all that is metered parking. So I have to deal with metered parking, which is a nightmare. But other than that, it's not bad. Keeping busy, keeping my brain in tip top shape because it is kind of complicated. But what have you been up to?
Well, nothing much. I'm just working out and just doing a lot of readings. Mainly Chinese medicine, doing some psychic and mediumship. But I'm also trying to clear my house out so I have more of a workout area and trying to, add more equipment to my workout routine. So, yeah, I'm just trying to be diligent with the diet and, trying to get, we'll see, if we can, I need to get my body back to where it was and I'd be closer to getting up to the stage for bodybuilding.
It's funny, you and I are polar opposites. You are into health and exercise, and I'm into being sedentary and eating fast food. Something tells me you're going to outlive me. So hats off to you for all the...
I don't know. Not necessarily. Hope,
true.
We don't have to outlive each other, but, I think it's, when people come to me, I think I'm not a medical doctor, so... I have to say that I cannot prognose or diagnose, and I say that. I mean, I have a lot of respect for allopathic medicine. We need a balance, but, I think that all we can do is keep our immune system up through good nutrition, exercise, and also a positive attitude if we can. So, yeah, I do a lot of sessions with different kinds of clients, and you name it, I've done it, and... a lot of chronic cases. I deal with lots and lots of chronic cases. So, but anyway, yeah, we're going to have a good first-time guest. I want to introduce a new guest. He's never been on since what? Since I've been on radio, which will be October, 6 years. But Steve Stockton is a local. I love promoting local people. His name is Steve Stockton. He's right out of Oregon, and he's been an author of different books. And I see that when I look, he's had some pretty interesting books, and we got some pretty interesting topics to cover tonight in the next hour. So, Strange Things in the Wood, a Collection of Terrifying Tales. I see more Strange Things in the Wood, a collection of true and weird things that are happening, and My Strange World. So if he's on, let's bring him on and have him introduce himself.
All righty. I'll bring him on right now. Steve, how's it going? You're live on Paranormal Radio.
Hey, it's going great. Thanks for having me on. Good to be here.
Great to to get you on.
Hi there.
So,
I'm Steve. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Sherry kind of gave a little brief intro, but if you want to maybe give our listeners a little bit of a more detailed introduction.
Yeah, that's what I was going to go into there. I'm Steve Stockton. I live currently just outside of Portland, Oregon. I've been out here about 9 years. Lived in Vegas before that, Florida before that, originally from East Tennessee. I've written several books on the paranormal, particularly strange things in the woods, things that you find in the woods or things that find you in the woods. Veteran outdoorsman. I've had an interest in the paranormal since a very, very early age. Saw first full-bodied apparition when I was between 5 and 6 years old, even though I'd had experiences before that. And rather than scare me, it just kind of piqued my interest. And like, you know, what was that? That's not supposed to happen. And found out that the more you explore in the paranormal and things like that, you're not going to find so many answers, but more questions. So it's a quest for questions at this point. I've been doing it about 50 years now.
You've been doing it.
50? You said 50?
What's that?
50?
Yeah, I was afraid my first experience when I was between 5 and 6, and I'm 57 now, so I've been on the hunt for about 50 years.
Wow, that's wonderful.
You've been doing it longer
wow.
than I've been alive. I'm pushing 50. I'm kind of in the same boat, you know, witnessing weird things when you're young a little bit and getting into the paranormal. And my thing is UFOs. I applaud you for continuing to search for questions, as you said, and answers. And mm-hmm. I think the more of us that do that, the more of us that have these experiences and talk about them, it only does a service to the paranormal community.
Absolutely, and it's posing those questions and putting them out there to other people that helps them to think or come to grips with their own experiences or even admit to it. A lot of people have had experiences that they're ashamed to admit to. They're afraid they'll be called crazy or accused of lying or making it up or something like that. So it does embolden people to talk about what's happened to them. On my YouTube channel, Missing Persons and Mysteries, listener stories where we have people send in their experiences. That's one of my most popular features.
Yeah, so I encourage anybody to talk about it. I imagine back in the day, it was probably more of a taboo to talk about it, but, you know, it's mainstream right now with all the shows and everything else. I mean,
I love it. It's like having a golden age or renaissance of the paranormal. And it's because when I first started getting into it, there weren't really any shows you had In Search Of, and maybe occasionally a Bigfoot documentary or something like that. There was a lot of UFO activities in the 70s, particularly in 73. There was a big UFO flap that year. I remember I was 10 years old, and there's all kinds of magazines and books, Chariots of the Gods, Ancient Astronauts, all that sort of thing. Big interest in that. And then it just kind of died out, and Bigfoot was in there too, and it's continued on, and now there's even more cryptids and even more UFOs and all kinds of weird, wonderful things out there.
Out of curiosity, I got to ask, you mentioned the year 73, which happens to be the year I was born. Where was all that UFO activity? Because I'm thinking there could be a possibility that I was dropped off by a UFO.
Hey, you never know. Really, it was nationwide. That was one of the largest UFO flaps that the United States had seen up to that point. Trying to remember what all happened that year. I would have to look. I don't have a timeline in front of me. But it was pretty much nationwide and maybe even worldwide. I'm sure there was stuff going on in other places at that time, too.
Interesting. So now, I think we were going to talk mainly about cryptozoology. And I have to say, we've talked about, like, I've talked to a lot of people regarding Bigfoot, and I have to say I've always been, and Sherry knows this, a kind of a skeptic. Well, no, I am a skeptic. I just feel like, and this is a question that I've put out there to other people, is I just feel like there's so many people in the outdoors, we would have better evidence and or a body by now of Bigfoot. Do you have any information on Bigfoot that could help sway me? I want to believe. I just have to be skeptical. I think we'd have more tangible evidence.
Yeah. And a healthy dose of skepticism is good, and I like to say a skeptic is just somebody that hasn't had the right experience yet. The best thing to do is get out there in the field, go to places where there are sightings, where they've seen the footprints, where they've heard the tree knocks and the howls and the yowls and the yips, and get out there and experience it for yourself. Maybe you'll get lucky or unlucky, depending on how you look at it. I've never had a sighting. I've had close encounters with them before. I've heard the noises. I've smelled them. You'll smell them before you see them, depending on which way the wind blows. I've seen the footprints, but I've never had a face-to-face encounter. That's the goal there. That's on my bucket list, is to actually see a Bigfoot.
I used to, in my youth, spend an inordinate amount of time out, you know, in central eastern Oregon. I mean, camping for weeks, and I've never seen anything. I've never even seen a UFO doing that. You would think me being into UFOs, I would have seen something all those years, but I had never seen anything. What about you, Sherry? Have you ever been out in the country and seen anything weird?
I have, but I'm not sure if it's a UFO. I saw with a friend of mine probably, 6 months ago, I said that on air, is that we were going, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning before pre-pandemic, and we were at Walmart. We're just kind of messing around, like to go shopping all of that all the time, and we were at Walmart in Cornelius, and I was looking up, and there was these lights that were just still, and they were flickering. They were really close, but they weren't moving, and I thought, maybe it could be, you know, an airplane, but it was white. Some of them were, there were, I think, three of them, and they were just not moving. I don't know. I don't think it was a star. It was just strange. So I think that, you know, being aware of it, I think there's more those kind of things around. I think you have to, you know, kind of be aware and look.
Yeah, I want to see stuff. I just don't see it. I mean, when I was young, before I came to Oregon and California, is where I had all my weird UFO stuff. And there was some UFO stuff up here in my 20s, but lately, in the last 20 years, I haven't seen anything. I would love to see it. I would love to have a big mothership hovering above me while I'm camping. That would just be the coolest thing ever. But it has yet to happen. But with other cryptozoology, I mean, the big one is Bigfoot. We hear about Bigfoot all the time, and I've talked about the Jersey Devil and all these other things. But what are some other ones, that other sightings of creatures that people are reporting?
Some of the really common ones right now after Bigfoot are Dogman. It's almost a werewolf creature, but more canine than lupine. And those are kind of scary. It's like a dog that walks on two legs. It supposedly growls. It's chased people. There's a researcher named Brian Bowden who was out hiking and had to relieve himself. He went on a tree, and just shortly thereafter, he had a dogman experience. So he's kind of thinking that, well, maybe the dogman thought I was trying to mark my territory, and he came after me. Another one that's popular lately is a creature or entity they're calling the Glimmer Man, which if you've ever seen the movie Predator, it's kind of like that. It's see-through, but you can make out the shape of a humanoid body. And so far it's been not particularly malevolent, but just a sense of evil that comes off of it. Although more recently I have heard of ones doing good things and helping people. So maybe the Glimmer Man is just misunderstood. Another one is an entity called the Flannel Man. And I don't name these. This is the names that they get on the internet and things. And it's a lumberjack-like character that's usually angry. He comes across people in the woods and not real happy about it. Although I have heard a story, I collected a story for Strange Things in the Woods more than 15 years ago, and I didn't realize until just maybe the last two or three years that one of the stories in there indeed is a Flannel Man encounter. I just never heard of Flannel Man at that point. But a friend of mine had gone hiking and was kind of angry when he went. He was mad at his boss and was just out stomping around in the woods and wasn't paying attention. GPS died. He hadn't brought any provisions with him or anything. Ended up spending 2 days in a national park or national forest. And just as he thought he was, you know, near death, he was not real happy. He encountered a guy, sounds just like the flannel man, blue jeans, flannel shirt, double-bladed axe, flailing away at a tree that pointed him the way out of the park. And it was actually really close to where he was at. He had to scramble up a bank and found a dirt park service road up there and just kind of collapsed. Sure enough, in a few minutes along came a truck, had a ranger in it, picked him up. And he said, I don't want to get the guy in trouble, but I'd like to thank that guy just over the hill there that was chopping wood. So the ranger kind of, you know, looked at it funny and said, I'll be right back. Got out of the truck, went down the hill, came back in a few minutes and took the guy on to the station there. They were going to call an ambulance for him because he was in such rough shape, dehydrated, scratched up, eaten up with bugs and things. And when he got there, he said, you never did tell me. Did you let the guy with the axe off easy? And the ranger said, buddy, I went down over the hill where you showed me. And there was nobody down there with an axe. There was no evidence that anybody had been chopping trees down there ever. We sort of frown on that thing here in the state park. And so whatever it was, hallucination, an entity, a vision, whatever my friend experienced. But he said, I know the guy was real. He said, I could see the sweat on his brow and things like that before he'd been exerting himself. So fascinating. That's just three of the recent ones I've heard about.
Is this a spirit, supposedly, that comes, or is this a real person, Steve?
Well, it seems to appear as a real person, but it seems to be some sort of entity because some people can see it, some can't. It's appeared inside people's houses before. It apparently has the ability to walk through walls and that sort of thing. So I don't know. It's almost like a shadow person type creature, but it takes the form of a guy wearing a buffalo flannel plaid, the red and black striped plaid.
That sounds kind of terrifying to see an entity, whatever it is, walking around
carrying
an axe.
Yeah, especially in your house when you didn't know anybody was in there. But a lot of them are frightening like that. I mentioned shadow people. That's one that a lot of people have encountered. Now, I have seen those. It looks like the figure of a person, but it's just a shadow. So see it move along the wall or cross through a room. Most recent one, about 2 years ago, I was going into my kitchen late at night. My little dog, Mulder, was with me. And we saw a shadow come out of the laundry room, across the kitchen, and then went through the wall behind the stove, which that leads out to my garage. And Mulder, he's a half Chihuahua, half Corgi mix, and, yeah, he's as odd as he sounds. He saw it, but he didn't bark at it. Instead, he kind of tilted his head, and he wagged his tail at it. But I didn't get the sense that it was necessarily benevolent nor malevolent, but it was just kind of in a hurry, just passing through. But that's still bizarre to see a shadow when there's no person to cast that shadow. And it's been described as being blacker than black, that it's darker than a normal shadow.
So since you brought this up, I have to mention it, and I've mentioned it for the last few weeks now, but since you brought up shadow people, now I didn't see this personally. But my girlfriend did. I live in a new construction townhouse. And about 2 weeks ago, she was in the kitchen, and she looked over, and she saw the cat stopped dead in its tracks, staring towards the second-floor bathroom. Well, she can't see that because it's around a corner. So she's like, what is the cat staring at over there? So she looks around the corner and sees like a humanoid from the waist up with its arms kind of Supermaned out, opaque, dark black, just float. I mean, she's like 10 feet away into the neighbor, you know, the townhouse that's attached. And to me, that's terrifying. But, you know, when you start Googling these things about shadow people, all you hear about is like they're evil, you know, they're bad. I'm not convinced of that. I think that like what you said is it didn't acknowledge anyone. It was just kind of doing its thing, but it's still kind of scary.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of just, I think, in our baser nature is to be fearful of things that we don't understand. And that's, I mean, that can be pretty frightening. You imagine a shadow, or even a partial shadow. Something to me about partial manifestations like that, that's scarier than anything. I'd rather see a full body apparition. I've read stories where people would see maybe a pair of legs, like from the waist down or even the knees down, crossing a parking lot or coming through the woods. That, to me, would be 10 times more frightening than if I saw the whole thing. I'd rather see the whole ghost than just the legs.
Well, I'm in a dark room. Actually, I'm in the living room where it was sighted, and just talking about it got me creeped out. So I opened the curtains to let light in, because now I'm freaking myself out.
Well, now that's one of the ideas. It goes back to the Native American, the First Nations people, the idea of a tulpa, a thought form that you can create just by thinking about something or reading about something or watching a show about something. And a lot of the elders in some of those tribes will caution you not to talk about certain things, not to mention their name, or not to, you know, watch shows about it or read about it or even think about it, because you give it energy and then that draws it to you. So there's that aspect of it. Is it something actually supernatural in that regard, like a creature or a ghost, or is it something we're creating? We're creating our own fear, and it's manifesting through some ability that we don't even know we have.
I totally agree with that. In fact, I've always believed that we manifest things into our life. But it's still, even if that was the case, it's still scary. So.
Indeed.
But and I'm also interested in this dog man. I mean, how tall are these things? It almost sounds like a werewolf to me. Are they big? Are they tall?
Yeah, they're tall. They're usually about the same size as Bigfoot. Some of them may be smaller, but standing on their hind legs, they're 6, 7, 8 feet tall or taller. To me, if you study the werewolf accounts from Eastern Europe, back, say, 1700s, 1600s, and even before, that's what it sounds like to me. Although different set of circumstances there, usually they would were able to trap the wolf or the werewolf, whoever was turning into it. You know, they would shoot it with a silver bullet or do this, that, or the other to it, and then they would find a human in the woods that dead, and then once that happened, they would stop seeing the werewolf. But with the dogman encounters, I haven't heard of that. I haven't heard of them, you know, shooting a dogman or anything and then finding a human that had changed into the dogman. So it seems to be like his own entity. And it shows up a lot of different places, and it's in some of the Native American lore. They have different names for it, but if you've read any of the reports out of Skinwalker Ranch, out in that area, they've spotted Dogman there. The original owners of the place, when the events started happening, I can't remember their name off the top of my head, but the lady was standing in the kitchen washing dishes and looking out the window, and she said she saw what looked like a portal open up out in the courtyard there, and a dog man just comes walking out of the portal, just stepped out and goes walking off in the distance, kind of made a face at her and then just kept going, and then the portal closed back. So weird stuff going on out there. And of course you've got shapeshifters and Wendigo and a lot of the Native American tales out there that people genuinely believe in those. I mean, those tribes, they take those legends seriously. There's places that you stay out of and stay away from. And a lot of that's believed to be, it was the Navajo and the Apache were at war with one another, and the medicine man, the shaman from each side, were busy flinging curses at the other side. And some claim that's where those entities come from, or some sort of Native American curse that's been on that land for literally centuries. And you can feel it when you drive out there, like going up through Colorado and over into Utah and stuff, New Mexico, what they call the Four Corners area out there, that it has a whole different vibe than anywhere else in the Southwest.
Wow.
I watched a TV show on Skinwalker Ranch not too long ago, a little while ago, and I guess there's a big thing with cattle mutilations. I mean, it's got everything. You got the cryptozoology, you got the UFOs, you got cattle mutilations, ghosts. Interesting place. And the government apparently investigated out there for a while, from what I remember.
Yeah, they had some installations going on out there, and then a couple of the different people that have owned it since have poured a lot of money into it. coming up with the highest tech they could, but haven't heard anything out of it yet. They either didn't find anything or what they found was so frightening they don't even want to talk about it yet.
Yeah, I would love to go camp there, see what that's all about. How about you, Sherry? You want to go see if we can camp at Skinwalker Ranch? I'm sure. I know it's very well protected. I think they even have like guards and stuff.
Yeah, they have armed guards and a gate there telling you, that they do not try to come any farther.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a privatized Area 51.
What was that, Sherry?
I said, I don't think so. No, thank you.
Oh, come on.
We couldn't get all of us, right? If they'd like to storm it like they were planning to do with Area 51.
Yeah. That was a flop.
Yeah, I didn't think that would go well anyway. When I lived out in Nevada, I used to go out to the extraterrestrial highway there to the white mailbox or the black mailbox. It's been several different colors, and there was a place you could go called Freedom Ridge where you could kind of see down into Area 51. But I think they've got that pretty much under control now to where you can't even go there. But there were a lot of strange lights in the skies, and the strangest thing I ever saw, now I'll call it a UFO because it was unidentified. I have no idea what it was. I don't know that it was necessarily from another planet, but it didn't look like anything that I'm aware that we have. I was lab manager for the in-house photography lab at one of the big casinos out there. The company that I worked for had the souvenir photo concession and put on like the Cirque shows and the high-end restaurants and things. Our camera girls would come up and bug you to get your picture made, and then we'd try to sell it to you, that sort of thing. So I ran the lab. And one night, we'd gotten off work probably around 1, 1:30, something like that, and one of my photographers needed a ride home. And she lived Henderson, down the south end of the Strip. So we were going down the south end of the Strip, and I don't recall exactly where it was. I know I was past Mandalay Bay, going farther south, and there was this huge black triangle. I mean, it was probably the length of a football field, and it was just hovering over a power station there on the south end of the Strip. Now, it didn't have any lights on it. It didn't make any noise. I actually pulled over and got out. The girl I was going to ride to, she was actually the first one to see it. She's like, what the hell is that? And we pulled over and got out and looked at it. Thing was huge. I mean, like I said, it was the length of a football field easy and probably half as wide, triangle shaped, kind of more, maybe more of a diamond shaped, a triangle with a little bump out in the back. Totally black. I mean, it blotted out the night sky. And as we're standing there looking at it, still it didn't make a sound, but all of a sudden it just went from hovering over this power station to straight up. I mean, if it made a noise, it would have been a whoosh, but it was just totally silent and then gone, just from the size of a football field to a pinprick, and disappeared in the matter of just a second or two. No noise, no forward motion, just went straight up. I have no idea what that was. Again, it could be some sort of extraterrestrial technology. It could be something we have, because literally just over the hill from there is where Area 51 is, and I'm sure they like to, the guys that jockey those experimental aircraft love to get out and freak the citizens out. I would, if I was one of those pilots, I'd love to get out and zoom around and watch people's jaws drop. But that's my closest UFO encounter. And like I said, I call it a UFO because I have no idea what it was. I don't think it was a flying saucer, but I don't know whose it was. One of ours, one of theirs, some other government, some sort of secret project. But it was impressive, and it sure could move fast, whatever it was, and blacker than the night sky.
That sounds awesome. I would love to see something like that. Yeah, I wouldn't surprise me if it's a, skunk works kind of deal, secret project. Now, in the 80s or 90s, I don't know, there was actually a dude that infiltrated Area 51. He was an archaeologist, I believe, and along that whole area, Area 51, Papoose Lake, there was markers that some settlers had gone through, and he tried for years to try and let the government, the Air Force, to let him on the, the Area 51 property, so that he could look for these markers. He didn't care about secret projects or UFOs. I mean, he was an archaeologist, and then one day he decides, screw the government. I'm just going to hike in. And he did, and he dodged patrols. He dodged helicopters. And he never found – he got to the location on Papoose Lake, which I believe is the location where Robert Lazar, Bob Lazar, said there were the hangars full of the UFOs. But he barely made it out alive because he ran out of water. And he documented his trip and everything. And he's the only one that I know that's actually, like – gone in and done it. And I'm sure technology has changed in the decades to where that's harder. I know on those ridges after they did the what I consider illegal land grab from the people that owned those areas, they've got cameras and sensors up there, and they got motion sensors everywhere, and it might probably be much harder to do now.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it'd be possible to sneak in there now, like you said, with all the technology and surveillance, high-tech stuff that they have there. I mean, you could imagine the stuff that we have. I've got 6 surveillance cameras on my house, proximity detector, motion lights. Imagine what the government would have available to them. So.
Absolutely. I just installed 4 cameras so I can view my residence while I'm not there. It's pretty awesome. Technology has come a long way. And very cool.
Absolutely. And I was talking to somebody about that the other night. The what I consider the modern UFO era started, you know, in the 40s with the Kenneth Arnold sightings over across the river here in Washington. And, of course, whatever happened out in the desert in New Mexico, whether you believe it was a weather balloon or a crashed saucer. But if you think about how our technology had been up until that point, and then how it began to grow with just leaps and bounds right after those incidents. It wouldn't surprise me if a lot of the technology we have today is reverse engineered from some other type of technology, or there's the theory that President Eisenhower, when he was in office, he signed a treaty with people from another star system and gave them permission to experiment on people in exchange for technology. So there's a lot of stories out there. It's hard to tell what's fiction and what's fantasy and what's a blend of both, but there's all kinds of stories supporting all kinds of theories.
Well, they do say that fiber optics came from reversed alien technology. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea.
Yeah, I think, you know, just after the 40s, you know, into the 50s there, the transistors, the integrated circuits, and now everything's gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. And some of these CPU chips have now can, you know, perform like millions of flops per second or whatever, how they calculate those. And in fact, you know, you can fit stuff on a little 1.5 by 1.5 inch chip that used to take up a whole room full of computer equipment. I mean, even as recently as when I was in college in the early 80s, you know, we had a building called the Spam Can. That's exactly what it looked like. And one whole floor was the computing center for the university. And it had, you know, the card readers and the big magnetic tapes on the wheels and everything. So, if you know, just looking at how far it's come just since I've been interested in computers and things, it's amazing. I mean, my phone has 10 times the horsepower that my first home computer did.
Well, I remember when I was growing up in the 80s, my father had a computer that literally filled an entire closet. And I remember, if I remember correctly, the disks, like the size of Frisbees, you know, much thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, he was a shady individual. He was doing government stuff. Who knows what he was really up to. But I imagine that probably wasn't really common for your average Joe to have a massive computer in their house. This was pre Commodore 64, or yeah, it must have been pre Commodore 64.
Definitely doing some kind of research or something there that wouldn't want everybody to know about.
Well, he was in the Israeli army, and I know he worked on some stuff having to do with satellites sort of thing, but he was connected because when we went to Israel back in the 80s, I got a tour of an Israeli nuclear submarine by an admiral. So he's got some connection.
He definitely held some sway, had some swagger in there if the admiral gave you the tour.
Yeah, and he was a grunt. He wasn't an officer in the Israeli army, so I don't know what – I've always thought that he was doing – so he was in the Mossad or some weird thing, you know.
Yeah, that, definitely. That, when you said Israeli army, that was my first thought, the Mossad or some type of agent like that.
Yeah, crazy. But, yeah.
And, you know, that happens. There's people in capacities like that. Have you heard of Operation Paperclip? Where the U.S. government took a lot of the scientists and doctors from Nazi Germany and put them to work here. And growing up as a kid, I lived in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. My dad was a scientist at Oak Ridge National Laboratory, and he worked alongside a lot of those guys. I remember I went home with a kid one time, and back at that time it was popular for homes built in the Cold War era after the World War. To have, they called it a fallout shelter. Usually it was just a little room in the basement, like hidden behind a wall or something. I went over to this friend's house after school once, and we were in his basement. He's like, "You want to see something cool?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And he goes over to, it's like the fake wood paneling there, and pushes on it, and it swings open, and goes in, turns on the light, and there's a whole room under there, and it's filled with one of the most incredible collections of Nazi memorabilia that I've ever seen. Swords, knives, Lugers, full dress uniforms. And I'm like, "Wow, your dad is really into this war memorabilia." And he's like, "Oh, you don't understand." He's like, "Those were his uniforms. He wore that."
Wow.
And I was just gobsmacked, you know, just no idea. His dad just, you know, quietly working out the National Laboratory, but he had this big collection of war memorabilia stashed away in the basement. And they did, I won't say their last name, but it was a very, very German name.
I don't think, you know, there's a lot of stuff in history they don't teach in school, and I don't think Operation Paperclip is taught in school. And I mean, there were people that had nefarious history in Nazi Germany, you know, SS, that got a free pass because they served some sort of purpose. There were some in the intelligence community that were helping, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're being funded by the CIA.
And I can kind of understand the U.S. government's thinking, you know, we've got all this research, we've got all these people that know these things, and some of them hideous testing and things that we would never do, but they've already done it. They already have the research. We can prosecute them as war criminals, or we can give them a pass, put them to work for us, and then tap into all that knowledge. And probably not unethical, but, you know, it didn't require doing those atrocities to anybody else to get that information.
I don't know, that sounds awful
to say it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the reasoning behind it. You know, and when I was in school, I don't ever remember hearing being taught that Germany and Russia actually had a pact at the beginning of the war, and they were both taking territory. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't teach that.
Yeah, definitely don't teach that in school. That's one of those you just have to find out about on your own. And that one's kind of fairly well known now. And I don't agree with what they did necessarily, but imagine if that's something that's known and pretty much admitted to. Think about some of the stuff they've done that you don't hear talked about, or that is never mentioned, or that's still in the shadows. I mean, look at some of things like MK Ultra, and they pretty much admitted that was a real program. So, you know, there's some frightening stuff out there. I love my country, but I don't trust my government.
You and me. Hey, Sherry, have you heard of any of that? Did you know all that stuff about Paperclip and the Russians and all that stuff?
Nope. This is all new to me. I'm
learning. Have we blown your mind, Sherry?
No, I'm just learning. I don't know. I don't have anything to say because I'm learning from this. I've never heard of it.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've ever had him on as a guest or not, but somebody that can talk at length about all this, and I'm better at it than I am, especially conspiracy stuff, is Ron Patton. You know Ron, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Ron Patton's a personal friend of mine.
Yeah, and he used to publish a magazine called Paranoia, and they covered all kinds of conspiracy theories and things like that. I was reading those magazines years ago, and then I ended up meeting him. I was on Clyde Lewis's show not too long ago, and Ron was the guy that set all that up. But that was a fascinating magazine. And then likewise, he and I had a mutual friend named Ron Bonds, who had a publishing company just outside Atlanta in the 70s and 80s called Illuminati Press. And that was how I got to meet John Keel, was through Ron Bunz. He had republished the Mothman Prophecies, and nobody had ever really heard of it. And then that's the edition that somebody picked up and said, this would make a good film. And then Ron died under mysterious circumstances. I mean, how fitting for somebody that was into all these conspiracies and published books about it and things to possibly die of one. He and his wife had gone out to eat at a Mexican restaurant that they often went to. And I think when I went down there in the 90s and met John Keel, we all went out to dinner. And I believe that's the same place that we went to for dinner. I can't say 100%. But anyway, he and his wife had gone to this Mexican restaurant. He ate off the buffet. He got food poisoning and then ended up like bleeding out inside or something like that and died the next day. But, you know, the strange thing about that, nobody else that ate there even got sick, let alone died, that was known. So did somebody poison the guy who was out to expose the Illuminati? It's just strange circumstances there.
Wow,
yeah,
really?
It wouldn't surprise me. I'm sure that happens more often than not. You know, people had an accident.
Oh, yeah, you hear about these suspicious one-car accidents where they just left the road and hit a tree or something like that. I mean, you know, it can happen. You can fall asleep at the wheel, but it seems to happen a lot. And then a lot of times if you follow the back trail of that and see, you can make the connections. I mean, maybe they're correct, maybe they're not, but you can see connections sometimes. There's some famous death lists out there, different people that have kind of left a lot of unexplained deaths in their wake.
So I got to ask, since we're amid this pandemic, do you think that the COVID vaccine, is some sort of conspiracy behind it? Or do you think that the government really has our best interests at heart and, you know, they're doing the best they can?
Well, I don't really know that I would ever say that the government has our best interests at heart. Again, if you follow the money, that would probably give you the best answer. But the only thing that concerns me about it normally, before any vaccine can get FDA approval or anything like that, it takes years, sometimes a decade or more, of extensive trials and studies and things. And they came out with that awful quick. They either know ahead of time that they were going to need it, or it's may not be as safe. I know I'm treading thin ice here, but it may not be as safe as it's purported to be.
I've seen some documents, and it's unfortunately hard to know what's true or not. There's a lot of BS out there that they knew this was going to happen years, and they were preparing for it. But who knows if that's really valid or not? But I am very skeptical of everything. And now what I'm reading, you know, before the show started, I was reading some articles on the Delta variant, and it's basically the article that I read flat out said, if you aren't vaccinated, you're going to get the Delta variant. You're the ones, it's all the people that are unvaccinated that are going to be in the hospitals and, you know, doom and gloom, you're going to die. It's now putting young people in the hospital. I mean, really throwing heavy the fear, and we're going to send people to houses now that are going to, you know, try and encourage people to get vaccinated. And that's just like red lights, you know, in my brain going, something is too odd about this. There's something not right here.
And that's the shame about it, because you don't know who to believe or what to believe. Or you can't believe the media, even especially the mainstream media, and then even some of the alternate media sources, doubtful as to how truthful they are. And then you can go on to these conspiracy sites like Godlike Productions is one, or Above Top Secret, and go to these forums, and, you know, it'll scare you to death to read some of that stuff in there. And then you kind of have to take a doom break and step back and say, well, you know, that could be just somebody making stuff up or role playing, or because I've seen so many predictions and so many, you know, my uncle is in the military and this is intelligence straight from him, and then it never pans out. So just I take everything with a grain of salt, you know, just wait and see what happens, I guess. But I try not to have an opinion on the vaccine and stuff like that, because it's such a polarizing thing. You know, there's people that will get mad at you for speaking your opinion, or one of my neighbors doesn't like it when I'm out in my driveway without a mask on. And she's like, mask up, neighbor. And one day I was asking her, I said, well, why? And she said, well, when you wear a mask, it protects you as well as others. And I said, you know, That's the same reason I have a concealed carry permit. She didn't like that answer, and she hasn't bothered to tell me to mask up again. But I'm outside my own yard. You know, if I'm going to catch it out there, I've already got it anyway. So
try coughing in public and look at the stares that you get.
Yeah, if you want to clear the crowds in the grocery store, Walmart, have a coughing fit.
Well, maybe the government is right, and the vaccine is the greatest thing ever, and everybody's going to be safe and blah, blah, blah. But I also look back decades ago of some of the things that the government's done. So it's like when they released pathogens in San Francisco subway, you know, that there's so much shady shit.
Yeah. Well, I said thalidomide. That was a wonder drug. It was a perfect thing to give pregnant women. And then, you know, when kids started being born without actual hands and feet, instead of almost like flipper-like appendages, they said, well, maybe it's not such a good thing after all. So, you know, you don't know who to trust, what to believe. And sometimes it's hard to just draw your own conclusions and stick to it. But, I mean, I'm open. I try to keep an open mind about everything. But said again, it's just everybody's galvanized one way or the other. And I'm non-confrontational like that. I don't like the idea of, you know, fighting, you know, the point that to that degree, you know, you can have a spirited disagreement and argue and just agree to disagree and move on, but people want to get physical about it and these confrontations. And watch that on the internet, some of the people blowing up, having these rages in public. And I think that's another thing. The internet itself has given us that such a amount of anonymity that people kind of carry that over into real life. Now, you can say anything when you're behind a keyboard and nobody can see you or knows who you are, but try that out in the real world, it's not always going to work so well. And I think people are finding that out.
I'm like you on that. I just want to lay low, you know. Everybody else can fight.
And I apologize. We got way off on a tangent here. I know I'm supposed to be talking about ghosts and people disappearing in the woods, but it's easy to get off on some of these topics and just get carried away. I like to talk, in case you couldn't tell.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, we're always all over the map on this show. But you brought up a good thing right there, moving away from COVID, people missing in the woods. I've heard a lot of stories about people going into the woods, not coming out, and never being found.
Yeah, it's alarming. I mean, just in the United States alone, according to NamUs.gov, who keeps track of such things, this in any given year, there are 600,000 people. I'm sorry, 60,000 people that go missing. I think I've got that right. Let me check. I want to check my sources here. Maybe 600,000. Anyway, it's a lot. And let's take a look at that real quick and make sure I'm not misquoting the government website here. Whom I don't trust the government anyway, but we'll see what their figures say. 600,000 individuals go missing every year. And then out of those, there are 4,400 unidentified bodies that are recovered. But you think about that, 600,000 individuals that go missing in the United States every year. Now, fortunately, a lot of those missing children and adults are quickly found alive and well. But there are tens of thousands of individuals that remain missing for more than a year, which, you know, a lot of the government agencies, the police, the FBI, things consider those cold cases after a year. But 600,000 people, I mean, that's enough to fill up several stadiums or to entirely empty the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That's a lot of people. But there's a correlation there with the national parks, too. A lot of people tend to go missing in the national parks under strange circumstances. Some of them never found again and no trace. And this is when, you know, the trained search and rescue plus volunteers, people with scent dogs, FLIR, helicopters, no trace of anything ever found. And that was the subject of my last book, National Park Mysteries or Disappearances and Mysteries, Volume 1, The Great Smoky Mountains. Wrote about that area. The Great Smoky Mountains National Park is the most visited national park in the country. Even last year, with everything that was going on, it had over 12.1 million visitors. And that's, I grew up in that area, so I'm very well versed in that. Been a lot of strange disappearances there. And the one that really got me turned on to all that happened in 1969. A little boy named Dennis Martin disappeared on Father's Day. He'd gone to Cades Cove with his father, his brother, and his grandfather, kind of a guy's day out. They'd gone up into the national park, and from Cades Cove, they'd hiked up to an area called Spence Field. And while they were there, they met another family named the Martins, no relation. And the two dads, the two Mr. Martins, decided that the boys, the Martin boys, should all play together. And they were playing either hide-and-go-seek or trying to circle around and scare the adults or something, depending on which time you hear it told. But Mr. Martin said he observed Dennis, who was wearing a red shirt, go into a pile of bushes or a clump of bushes there. And then in a few minutes, you know, when the other kids had jumped out or showed back up or whatever, I'm like, well, where's Dennis? Like, well, we hadn't saw him since we started playing. So he goes over to this clump of bushes where he saw his son walk into and walks all around it, walks in it. No Dennis. Kid was 6 going on 7. And I was roughly the same age at the time. I think Dennis was 6 going on 7 and I was 5 going on 6 or somewhere. We were just a few months apart. And I started at that time the largest manhunt that had ever been in the Smokies for a lost person. Ended up, the FBI got involved right away. And one of the strangest aspects of it, the Green Berets came in and helped search for him. Now, the Green Berets don't search for missing people. That just doesn't happen. But it did on this occasion. And as another thing that happens a lot of times with these strange disappearances, inclement weather will blow up out of nowhere. A torrential rainstorm happened right after Dennis disappeared, therefore wiped out any trace evidence, your footprints, things like that. Nothing was ever found. Now there was a family over on the other side of Cades Cove that were looking for a bear, thought they saw a bear. And the dad said, no, that's not a bear. He described it as a rugged, hairy man carrying something over his shoulder. And they saw this right after they'd heard the most blood-curdling scream they had ever heard. So there's some people that have conjectured that whatever that was, whether it was a Bigfoot or there's stories in the Smokies and technically all throughout Appalachia of wild men that live in the park, that, you know, feral people that have been in there for decades and didn't leave. And some have even said that that's why it became a national park, that they kind of contained that area to keep them in there because they knew they were dangerous to the general populace. But, yeah, that's, what, 52 years, I think, now that Dennis has been gone. His dad passed away on my birthday a couple of years ago. Never any closure, anything, no idea what had happened to him. And it's the saddest thing. I used to see him around Knoxville. And every year the local channels there, TV channels, would mention something about Dennis around Father's Day. And they had an interview with him one time. And he said, you know, he said, someday I think that I'm going to be sitting here and there's going to be a knock at the door. And I'm going to go to the door and there's going to be a good-looking gentleman there. And I would say, can I help you? And he's going to say, Dad, it's me. It's Dennis. I've come home. Huh. And that just never happened. And oh, my, talk about breaking your heart. But Dennis is just one of many disappearances like that in the Smokies. In the 70s, mid-70s, I think 75 or 76, Bearden High School student Trini Gibson went on a school trip into the park. They hiked up to Clingman's Dome, the highest point in the Smokies, and she disappeared on the way out. No sign of her ever came up. Odd thing about that, her and Dennis Martin, which even though they're disappearances were about 6 or 7 years apart, they lived in the same neighborhood in Bearden, a community there in West Knoxville. And she's never been found. And I actually, my niece, I went to Crosstown School, went to Carnes, which was one of Bearden's rivals, but my niece was good friends with Trini's sister, Tina. And she essentially drank herself to death. It just destroyed the whole family. Turned into fights, and the mom and dad ended up hating each other. The kids were, she had an older brother and a younger sister. They were both estranged. And Tina said sometimes, you know, when her dad was drinking and getting angry, he'd say things like, I wish you'd been the one that disappeared and things like that. But I talked to her at length, and she said, you know, deep inside, she said, there's a part of me that like to think Trini just snuck off with a boy. You know, her parents were kind of authoritarian and said that I'd like to think that, you know, she's somewhere using a different name, living a perfect, happy life in sunny Southern California. But then she got kind of a morose look on her face, and she said, but in my heart of hearts, she said, I don't think Trini ever left that mountain alive. So, again, so you know, where'd she go? What happened to her?
The moral of the story is don't go camping out there. Why would the Green Berets come out? That to me is very strange. It's almost like, did they know there's something going on out there?
Well, that was the conspiracy side of it. It was something that, and there's a guy on YouTube that has a channel called South Force 10, and he claims that some of his relatives were hired by the government to go in and exterminate some of these wild feral people in there. Not only are they wild and feral, but they're also cannibals. They like to eat other people. And he claims that he had relatives that were paid by the head to go in there and help exterminate some of these. But he claims that's what happened to Dennis, that he was eaten. And the Green Berets, I mean, that's the cover story is they were on maneuvers nearby somewhere in North Carolina and decided to just come over and help. But I said that doesn't happen. Find me another case where the Green Berets showed up and helped look for a missing kid. And the other thing about them, they wouldn't have anything to do with any of the park rangers or any of the other search and rescue. They stayed together. They had their own communications equipment. They had their own maps. They did their own thing and kept well apart from anybody else. They were there on some kind of secret mission, I'm sure. And I don't know if it was to take out these creatures that were supposedly eating people or what. But just like I said, you don't see the Green Berets doing search and rescue. And the gentleman from the Knoxville FBI field office that was over the Dennis Martin case after years after, which committed suicide under strange circumstances, he went into a bar there on Clinton Highway in Knoxville, a night spot for drinking and dancing, popular place, went inside, strode out into the middle of the dance floor, and pulled out a service revolver and took himself out. Now, that's kind of a spectacular way to take yourself out. But there was no note. There was no nothing. You know, nobody knows why he did it that way. But that's part of the speculation, is it had something to do with the Dennis Martin case. And as you delve into things, it's not just in the Smokies. I mean, there's more there. There's the Thelma Pauline Melton who went missing in 81. There was another gentleman that just went missing a few years ago. Now, there's just a few that are found. But a lot of times there's even odd circumstances when people are found. They will be found, say, with their clothing on backwards, or they'll be found without their shoes. They'll be found in an area that's previously been searched, sometimes many times, and usually pretty close to where they disappeared from. And it's all over the national parks. There are cluster maps that show where the most missing people are, and it lines up with the National Parks Yosemite. Crater Lake here in Oregon has a lot of missing people. I think of where else. I say Yosemite already. Shasta, although it's not a national park, it's a national wildlife area. A lot of strange disappearances on Mount Shasta and that whole Trinity Shasta area there in the Sierra Nevadas. But
what do you think that happens to Steve?
I think there's something taking people. Now, there's a lot of different theories on that. Some people believe that it's either a serial killer or a group of serial killers that travel the country. And if they are, they're the most successful serial killers in history. They don't leave any shred of trace evidence or DNA evidence or forensic evidence. If it's wild animals, which some people claim that, you know, it's big cats or bears taking people. Well, I can show you dozens and dozens of cases where a big cat or bear has taken someone. And they don't do it without leaving a mess in the scene. A bear will absolutely tear a person apart, but there's evidence of that. There's blood. There's signs of a struggle. There's torn clothing. And unless the animal eats the entire thing, big cats will cache their kills up in a tree, and a bear tries to bury theirs in the bushes. But, you know, there would be evidence if it were bears or lions or mountain lions or cougars or whatever in some of these cases. There's no evidence of that. Also, people claim that it's maybe alien, UFO abductions. You know, that's just one of the theories that would explain how they go missing and stay missing, and then they find them in an area where they've already searched. And in some of the cases, the person may have been missing for a month or two, but when they find the body, the autopsy shows that they've only been dead for like a week. Now, where were they the rest of the time? You know, you're missing for 2 months. Where were you the other 7 or 8 weeks? There's just so many things that doesn't make sense. There's also the theory of portals, that there's some kind of portals that people can accidentally wander through and takes you to either another dimension or another place. Some people call it the other, takes you to the other. Some of the cases of people that have lived to come back say this, like, I was just walking along, I was on the trail, suddenly I'm not on the trail anymore. I look around, nothing looks familiar. In some cases, they'll say, I could hear the searchers yelling for me. I'm yelling back. They can't hear me. I couldn't see them, or maybe I could see them, but they couldn't see me. They couldn't hear me. And just all kinds of manner of things like that. So is it just something dimensional like that? Is it a time warp or a rip in the space continuum, or the kind of comes together and then splits back apart and gets taken over into somewhere else accidentally? And then there's also a theory that's getting a lot of steam now, that it's based on elementals and the Fae. If you look back at fairy lore in Britain, particularly Ireland, like 200-300 years ago, they had technically a fairy religion there in the Celtic countries. And to this day, they still believe in the Fae folk. And there's certain things that you do and don't do. And because a lot of these disappearances, it'll be while the people were picking berries or in the proximity of where berries will grow. Well, that's the Fae's food source. Not only that, but inside those the blackberry bushes and things, that's where they have their dances and their mating rituals. So you're not just taking their fruit, you're interrupting their game there. And also, a lot of people that go missing tend to be wearing red, which you'd think would be just the opposite. You'd think somebody with red on would be easier to spot. But that's not the case. That's supposedly the Fae folk don't like the color red. So like I said, that would get a lot of traction. And people will kind of snicker at that, but the same people will believe, like, okay, maybe UFO abductions, or okay, maybe Bigfoot is taking people, because that's one of the others. But the belief in Bigfoot and UFOs, it's coincides with the belief in the Fae. If you look back into those stories and teachings and stuff, Bigfoot is one of the Fae, one of the elementals. Same with UFOs, the things that come out of the sky. And that's something, as it's more prevalent in Ireland and those countries over there. But you also have it in a lot of the Native American lore. It basically describes the same beings, but just by different names. For instance, the Cherokee had what they call the little people, the Yonwei to Sunday, the little men. And they fought with them for years and years and then finally made a peace. But they claim that they still live in the Smokies, little people about 2 or 3 feet tall. They've got their own version of Bigfoot, a large hairy man that they've also had battles with and things. So if you look back, you know, and a lot of that lore is thousands and thousands of years old. So, you know, here we are in our post-nuclear age and all high and mighty with our technology, snickering at fairies. But it's some of the same stories that have been told for technically eons that includes all kinds of cryptids and all kinds of visitors from other places and things. So it's fascinating. It's hard to get your head around and just sort out one thing to say, yes, it can be this. I could see it being all those things. It could be a serial killer. It could be Bigfoot. It could be UFOs. It could be a fairy. There's nothing to prove or disprove either or any of those theories, really. But whatever it is, it takes people, and it leaves no trace in most instances.
Well, hopefully we get some answers. Well, I'm looking at the clock, and actually we're out of time. How can people locate your books?
Okay, my books are available on Amazon.
Oh, his call just dropped. Are you still there, Sherry?
I'm here.
Oh, you just disconnected. We'll give him a second to call back in.
Okay.
It's the government. They are... there he is. All right. Looks like we got disconnected there.
Yeah, sorry about that. Probably those darn black-eyed kids.
Yeah.
I didn't get to talk about them, but a lot of times when I mention the black-eyed kids, I'll have problems with my technology. But my books are available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. My publisher likes me to say that. I have Strange Things in the Woods, which was my first book. The second was More Strange Things in the Woods. Those have been combined into one volume now. Third book is My Strange World, which are my personal experiences. Then the book that just came out, National Park Mysteries and Disappearances, Volume 1, The Great Smoky Mountains, and Volume 2, California, which includes Joshua Tree, Yosemite, and Mount Shasta, goes into my publisher tomorrow. It'll be out at the end of August. Also, check out my YouTube channel, Missing Person Mysteries. Going really well over there. We've got just under 100,000 subscribers and lots of stories of missing people. And we do just the regular, you know, stories about the missing, and then we delve over into the mystery side of the channel name, and we look at some of the stranger cases too.
I'm going to do that right when we get off. I'm going to go check out the YouTube channel. Well, Steve, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight, taking the time. It's been great. We talked about so many things.
Supporting local shows, yeah.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah, your time. It's awesome, Steve. We're going to have you back.
Sure, anytime. Just let me know.
I will. Wow. Well,
thanks,
how
folks.
Is a really
you have a good night.
Guest.
You too.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Really good guest.
All right. Well, you know, Sherry, as usual, it's my dinner time. I gotta figure out some sustenance. So, unless you have anything else.
No, nothing else. I don't know. I should probably plug myself in if anybody wants to get a hold of me. I'm psychic medium Sherry, and you can get a hold of me at Facebook, Psychic Medium Sherry, at C-H-E-R-I. Go ahead and give me a like and send me a message if you're interested in Chinese medicine or psychic and mediumship readings, or you can go on my website at www.psychicmediumsherry, again, at C-H-E-R-I.weebly.com. Go ahead and fill out the contact form, and I will get back to you in between clients. All right, that's pretty much about it. Yay!
And there's no way to get a hold of me. I kind of live in the shadows, unfortunately. But, well, I guess there is a way to get a hold of me. If for some odd, strange reason somebody wanted to get in contact with me, I don't know why they would. You can always contact us on Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. And if you haven't already, give it a like. And with that, Sherry, I think I'm going to cook some mac and cheese. We'll see everybody next Sunday. I think we're going to do a pre-recorded show. We'll find a show from the past and load it up, take a week off. And with that, I guess that's it. Good night, everyone.
Take care. Peace, everybody. Bye-bye.